Okay.
It's on.
Good morning, Rabbi Yisrael. Thank you for taking the time this morning, for being here to learn together on this very important morning. I want to start off by thanking Ed Klar, who is sponsoring for the upcoming Yahrzeit of his grandfather, Mr. Morris Schwartz, Moshe Ben Sandel. That's going to be this coming Wednesday. Thank you for making this share part of the Zechira. We're going to be learning actually very appropriately on that on the topic. We've just come out of Parshas Vayechi, and this last Shabbos has been Team Shabbos talking about end-of-life matters. And so this is particularly geared towards this more somber topic. So let's focus. Oops. Let's focus one second. I'm sorry about that. There's something just happened. Okay. My apologies. I think that one needs to be touched the top. Sorry. Okay, so what we're going to do is like this, is that there are copies coming around. We're going to be focusing on some of the history and the halacha of the Chevra Kadisha. It's funny that the non-Jews seem to think that the Jews control all the worlds, and they control the world banks, and they control the politicians, and so on. And I remember Rabbi Jonathan Sacks saying, little do they know that they can't even control a shul board meeting, you know. But they do have a secret society. But the secret society is not called the elders or the elders of Zion. It's called the Chevra Kadisha. One of the sacrosanct aspects of the Jewish community is the Chevra Kadisha, which literally means the holy society. There are many societies, but this is one which is intact in almost every community, although somewhat differently today than it was in the times in Europe. So here is how it goes. We're going to start at the very beginning and try to see just some of the ways that this manifests itself and some of the interesting practices that surrounds this particular and this unique chevra. So here's how it goes. We know that the Torah places an incredible value on the sanctity of life, but not just the sanctity of life, also the sanctity of the human body. So as an example, even a person needs to be killed by capital punishment and hanged. For example, to others, we know that the Torah places emphasis on lo salin niv lo sai, that a person should not leave the image, the body hanging up overnight. Why not? And Rashi tells us a very famous mashal that it's as if there were twins, identical twins. One of them ascended to a seat of power, became a prince, a king, and the other one was a no good burglar, was a robber. And what happens is that every time that there is an indictment which is upon the not so good twin, every time he's seen in the media, seen in the news, that everybody says, oh look, the king, the prince, is under attack. And so what is the Nimshal, Rashi tells us, is that the human body, so to speak, is Tzelem Elokim. It has the capacity of being godlike, and therefore when you degrade the body, when you degrade the way that it's treated after death, that is in a certain sense reflective, so to speak, on Hashem, who's the images of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore there's a great emphasis placed in the Torah in making sure and ensuring that the human body that encases a human life, even after it's passed away, is treated with the utmost of respect. We see a number of places where this is expressed in other people taking care of those who no longer can take care of themselves. As an example, the end of Bereshis, the very, very end of Sefer Bereshis, which we just completed Chazak, Chazak, Venis Chazak yesterday, end of Perek Nun, we're told that Yosef makes an oath for his brothers and that he's going to, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ultimately take him out, Pakod Yifkod Elokim Eschem, and he says, and then you should take care of me. When you come out, you should take care of my bones. Vayomas Yosef ben Meav Eser Shonim, Vaychantu Asoi Vayisim Oysov Aron ben Mitzrayim, and he was embalmed, and he was placed in a coffin until further notice, until the point in time where he was able to be taken out by his brothers. So ultimately, it's interesting, this is one of the dynamics we have over here, and it occurs early in the parasha to a certain degree as well, where you have certain people caring for those who are no longer able to take care of themselves. Here is Yosef, in fact, under oath, making his brothers care for him. It is interesting to note, as a fascinating sidebar to this, is that there was a lot of distrust between Yosef and the brothers following the death of Yaakov. They felt that in the absence of the, so to speak, the patriarch of the family, there's going to be trouble for them. It's so interesting that Yosef's response to this is to make himself vulnerable. You know, interesting, he puts himself in their
control, so to speak. He makes himself vulnerable to them. He doesn't turn to his court. He doesn't turn to the Egyptians. He turns to his brothers, the same people who just previously doubted his care for them. He puts himself in their care. Rav Soloveitchik points out that to a certain degree, making oneself vulnerable is ultimately the way to heal that wound. Fascinating, fascinating point. Nonetheless, this is where Yosef entrusts himself, so to speak, to his brothers rather than the society around him, and they've come true. Ultimately, Moshe, who is going to be the descendant of Levi, who was one of the instigators in the sale of Yosef, or the instigators in the attempted expiration or extinguishing of Yosef, was the one who's going to ultimately bring back the bones of Yosef. So there's just a very beautiful circle in this. And in fact, the Medrash Rabbah goes on to say, commenting on exactly this in source 2, Vayashba Yosef, Vayashba Yosef es Bnei Yisrael v'goymer, Shomea ani miyad Talmud loymar, is he asking for this immediately? No. The Pasuk says, Itchem with you, keshetiyu olim, uminayin af atzomas shal shvoten eloimoy. So the Midrash says it wasn't just him, it was everybody else as well, the rest of his brothers. It says, Vayomes Yosef ben Meoves Reshonim Aichantu Asoi, Michanotai. Who was Itchem? So who was that embalmed him? Pinchas Rabbi Yehuda, B'shem Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Reifin Chantu Asoi, Rabbi Pinchas Amar, Shvatin Chantu Asoi. There's a debate. Was this the Egyptian practitioners, or was it the Jews? Was his brothers who in fact took care of him? So there's a discussion as to how much are we responsible as B'nai Yisrael, literally B'nai Yisrael at this point in time, to take care of the deceased. This now sets into motion. The question is throughout the ages, throughout history, the responsibility of the living as it relates to those who have passed away. What is the responsibility of the living to those who passed away? We see a number of very fascinating mentions of this. One interesting expression is actually from the Torah itself. The Torah tells us about a Kohen Gadol as an example. The Kohen Gadol has very limited ability to be metame. Whenever one has to be at a funeral, and Leilu should not have to be at funerals, but one's at a funeral where there are Kohanim, it's worthwhile noting that many Kohanim have never ever been into a Beis Kfaros. They've never entered. They don't know what the inside of a cemetery does look like unless it's for their Krovim, unless it's for their immediate relatives. What is interesting is that the Torah talks about this and says in Parashas Emor, "Va'al kol nefashos meis lo yavoi lo aviv limoy lo yitama ba kohen gadol." A kohen gadol can't even metame for his zayin krovim, for his immediate sphere of family. But the Sifra says that may be true about his father and his mother, but there's one exception. What's that exception? Says the Sifra, which is the Medrash Halacha, "Lo aviv limoy lo yitama metame hu lemeis mitzvah." But should the Kohen Gadol himself, the person who has no access at all to any form of impurity, he's traveling along the road and he finds a niftar she'ein lo kovrim. There's a person who's passed away, has no one to take care of him. There's a responsibility, a due responsibility upon that person to stop what he's doing and be matami himself. That's the one exception for a Kohen Gadol, is when it comes to somebody else who's in a state of need, where you have a mace mitzvah. That's how severe, that's how far this goes. Even to the Kohen Gadol. So the truth be told is that it sounds like at this point in time that the responsibility is upon those who are around. It doesn't sound like there's any institutionalized form of responsibility. It sounds like, you know, if the Kohen Gadol's there, the person needs to take care of, the brothers are going to take care of Yosef. So where how early back can we trace the idea that it's not simply individuals but rather societies? So there are a few interesting mentionings. Again, we're kind of poking around in the dark. I just want to, you know, acknowledge that. It's, you know, there happen to be a number of references to the notion of societies, but we should not, you know, try to dupe ourselves into thinking that the only things that exist are the things that we can find reference to. Meaning to say, the Chevra Kedisha, the notion of a society, has been with us for a time immemorial. Happens to be we're finding some references, but not all the time do people need to write down everything so that we, later on, would be able to acknowledge that. So there's obviously, this is a very, very ancient tradition, but here are a few fascinating references as to where it appears. We'll take a look at some of the historical expressions of this. One is in Maseches Smachos. What is Maseches Smachos about, just out of interest? It's about Avelos. It's about Avelos. It's interesting that this is a euphemism, right? So Maseches Smachos is about Avelos, and it's a euphemism many times in Talmudic language. This is earlier than the Talmud. we'll see the certain things mentioned in a euphemistic way. So this is about smachos, but it's not really smachos, it's about avelos. And we're told the following, this is in the 12th perek, kach hayu chaburos oisin b'Yerushalayim. There will be groups in Yerushalayim who would do such. Eilu lebeisa ha'ovel, ve'elu lebeisa mishte, eilu lespoel el shavua ben, ve'elu lelaket ha'tzomos. There'd be different groups who are responsible for different functions in society. One would be going to a beis ha'ovel, one would be organizing a beis ha'mishte, which means a wedding, right? Weddings, they'd be in charge of weddings. Eilu leshavua ben, what's shavua ben? Right, so actually it's interesting, this relates also to the Shalom Zohar, is one of the ways it's expressed in the Gemara. There'll be certain people who are responsible for this. So already in the Maseches Smachos, we have this notion of chaburos. We have these like sort of, you know, groups of people who are responsible for this. It's communal institutions, which makes a whole lot of sense that you have people doing this. In fact, there are those who argue that Maseches Smachos itself was written as a guideline for a chabura. Was written as a guideline for those who are in charge of taking care of those who passed away. The most famous and the most important reference to Chevra Kadisha in the times of the Gemara is the following. This is the one which actually has a very important halachic import, and it demonstrates the shift between individualism and societies. Individuals caring for the dead and societies caring for the dead, and why it's so important. As opposed to the model of Meis Mitzvah, where everybody drops everything, why it is that a Chevra exists. And here's what the Gemara says. It's a very fascinating story. The Gemara says in the fifth source about Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna, by the way, passes away around the year 320 Common Era. So let's just, in terms of dating ourselves, understanding where this is coming from. Okay, we're at the very beginning of the 4th century of Common Era. Rav Hamnuna ikla le Darumusa. So he came to a city called Darumuta. Shama kol Shifura. So he heard the call of the shofar, de Shichva, that relates to the fact that somebody had died. So when there was a patira in that particular town, somebody would blow the horn, and everybody would be able to know now that there was a patira. Unfortunately, if anybody's ever been in Yerushalayim, have you ever seen those? They have cars with loudspeakers that go around announcing the patira, right? So this is the precursor to that. There would be a horn which is blown. Somebody would know that something happened in the town. And so what was interesting is he says, Chaza hanach inshi de ka'avdi avirita. But he saw that although the horn was blown, people carried on with their work. The blacksmith was still banging, right? The market was still open. Everyone was doing their business. Amalahu lihavi hanach inshi b'shamta. So he puts everybody into a shamta. What's a shamta? A cherem. He says, he puts everyone into a cherem. He says, olay shichva ikub b'masa. Is there not a dead person in this town? In other words, what's he expecting? What does he expect of the village? If there's somebody dead, everybody drop everything. The moment you hear the shofar, drop what you're doing and go and take care of the mace. So Amrulay, they said to him, Chavurasa ika b'masa. No, don't worry. We have a chavurasa, a chabura, which means some sort of society we have in this village. Amalahu ihachi sharia lechu. He says, therefore, I'm going to take you out of the cherem, of the nidui, of the shamta that I just put you into. Okay, so what do you see over here? This is the fascinating insight that Rav Hamnuna is teaching us. And that is that when there's no chabura, when you have no chevra, then the responsibility of looking after the mace is incumbent upon everyone. What is one of the reasons why we have a chevra? Is because it takes the load of responsibility off the individual and moves it onto the society. Now the society, in a certain way, a sense, enables everybody to be able to know that it's taken care of. There's a responsible group of people, and they're going to be doing it. Everybody else can now, so to speak, rest their laurels on this group. That's the institution of the Chevra Kadisha. Yeah, Ramosh.
Once that happens, that excludes the Kohen.
Correct. And this now, in a certain sense, for most cases, this will now preclude Meis Mitzvah because it's not incumbent upon who finds, but rather, now, of course, there are many cases of Meis Mitzvah. There still are cases where it falls between, and certainly between the cracks, and people on the way, and traveling, and Chas V'Shalom, and all kinds of things could happen. But in a typical situation, we're now absolved of that particular, of this concern. In fact, this is Paskin and Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch in Shin Mem Gimel in Yoredeh, Paskin's the Salacha, and that means to say that if there's a mace in the ear, the Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to do work, anybody who's involved has to be involved. However, if there are chaburas, he says, Be'ir, if there are these groups in the city that deal with the meisim, then it's mutar b'yom she'en yuma. So he says, then in such a case, you are allowed to be involved in your work. Fascinating. So this is one of the halachic imports of this. Let's take a look at some of the historical notes of where you see this appearing. Some just interesting points. Yerushalem.
It still seemed from the language that he was still upset with people.
Yes, it does.
But it still seems that their behavior was, just because yes, there's a Chevra Kedisha around, doesn't mean you should carry on your behavior.
Nachon, it seems to be there's something missing. And in fact, it's interesting, if you look at the last line of the Shulchan Aruch, which is at the top of page 3, he does say, Avol b'shas ha'tzo'asoy ha'kol betelin. He says, even though in the preparation stages, the Tahara, taking care of the details, the organization, then this society deals with it. When it comes to Hoitzahsoi, which means to say the actual Levaya itself, everybody should be putting down their tools, everybody should be involved in the mace. Which means to say it's not an absolution. This is not saying, well, you know, now it's fine, you go and go back to the tennis game, right? It means to say that no, that actually we bear a responsibility when it comes to the technical details. We can now assume that it's taken care of. But yes, we certainly have a responsibility. And I mean, we live in a very big area. We live in New York, which is huge, and there's many, many different chevras. But you can imagine, when one lives in a smaller town, there's, you know, 1, 2, 3 shuls, and everybody knows everybody. And that's such a situation. Yes, we know there's a situation. We know the chevra is taken care of, but we're all going to make sure we get to the levi, because it's our town, it's our people, it's our chevra. So there's a much more of an intimacy, which he seems to be castigating, even in terms of their behavior. Few interesting places we see this. Just for one or two questions before we get there, and that is the name itself. Why is it called a Chevra Kadisha? Chevra literally means a society or a group. Chabura. What does Kadisha literally mean? It means holy. It comes from the Kadisha. Kadisha is the Aramaic translation of that. So why is it called a Chevra Kadisha? So I would have thought that the reason why it's called a Chevra Kadisha is because it relates to the people doing this work are holy individuals, are sacrificing of their own time on many times on a volunteering basis. But it's interesting, Rabbi Chiya Michal Tukhachinsky says that the reason is because, it's not because of them, but it's because of who they're dealing with. Meisim, a person who's Nifra, is called a Kadosh. So Chevra Kadosh means the society that deals with holiness. Right, that when the holy nature of the work dealing with a kadosh and niftar, that's the reason why it's called a chevra kadosh. In fact, it has another name in some cities. In some cities, it used to be called chevra goyim lechasadim chesed shel emes. That was its longer acronym. It was chevra goyimeles chesed shel emes. So why Chesed Shel Emes? Famously, we all know that this particular activity is called a Chesed, a giving of truth. Why? Because there's no return. There's no return. Now, by the way, I do have to admit there is a return, because anybody who's involved in the Chevra Kadisha feels a deep, deep sense of satisfaction from knowing they're doing important work. There's no question about that. It's a very deep thing. In fact, Lewis just told me actually just yesterday a story about his grandfather. Lewis, it's your grandfather, who said that interesting situation where his grandfather was involved in the Chevra Kedush for 54 years in his town. Way out, Rabbi Lewis. This is the story of your mother's father, right? And so 54 years, and ultimately, the end of his life, he was actually in a cemetery. He slipped, fell, injured, and ultimately that injury led to his patira. It was interesting that on insurance paid the full everything for this. In a certain sense, there is a payback. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sorts us out that it was taken care of. But nonetheless, there is another element of why it's called Chesed Shel Emes. And again, Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky in the Gesher HaChaim says it's because what is the insignia of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What is the Chosoma Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is MS. Why is MS, the word MS, the insignia of Hashem? So famously, we know that the word MS comes from the beginning, the end, and the middle of the alphabet, right? In a certain sense, it's the infinity of Hashem is expressed throughout all the tools of articulation. Aleph Mem Taf. He says, in the same way, the chesed that a person does for a mace, for somebody who's passed away, is an everlasting chesed. Not just that it's a chesed shel emes without payback, but it's also a chesed which is an everlasting chesed. It's something which remains for eternity. Very, very long, has a lot of longevity. That's the chesed shel emes, one of the names of the society. Here's a few interesting examples of it in history. So if you just, we're going to cross the globe in a few different places to see some of the ways that chevras used to operate and some of the very interesting associations they had with it. So one example is over here. I'm actually quoting an article here in the Jewish Chronicle in 1892, so from 128 years ago, by Reverend M. Adler, who says the following. He's quoting a situation which arose in North Africa. There was a very rich Jewish society in Morocco for many, many years, and many times it was actually a very successful society, a very successful community, and at other times there were a number of persecutions. We learned recently about the Arachama Kodesh, who was actually born in North Africa and had to flee because of the persecution in his area. On the whole, it was generally a good time for the Jews. And today, one can go visit, one can go see the many, many Jewish institutions and Batei Kfaros there. And there's a lot of history there. Here's all the writings about the involvement of a person by the name of Rav David Ibn Zimra, who's called the Radvaz, who has many, many responsa. And listen to what he says. This is an abridged version. In those days of Rav David Ibn Zimra, the Radvaz, owing to the numerous persecutions and troubles of our people, they were in such dire straits that they were unable to inter their dead in the ordinary cemeteries. It became the custom in North Africa to entrust the corpse to a Jewish ass driver, so a donkey driver, who hid it among the merchandise to be carried to a distant community where it could be decently buried. So obviously you can see the persecution in this particular area was such that even burial itself was something which was to be feared. Sometimes, out of dread of being discovered concealing a dead body, the ass driver would throw down the corpse in the open roads and flee for his life. This scandal caused great pain to the elders and the colleagues of our revered master, the Radvaz, and the prominent members of the community in the town of Fez, one of the great Jewish strongholds in Morocco, assembled together, established fixed rules for the burial of the dead, and formed a society by whose means a certain number of men should in rotation have charge of the obsequies of their brother Israelites. The communities of Mostarabian and Mahrabian Jews, in spite of the fierce opposition of the Mahmadians, in other words the Muslims, forthwith constituted themselves into chevras, and from that time funerals were properly conducted. The formation of these burial societies were part of the good work accomplished by our learned master, Rav David Ibn Abi Zimri, of blessed memory. And now he comments, this is Rabbi Adler, who's writing the article, says, this incident belongs to the beginnings of the 16th century Radvaz, who was the author of the system of reckoning dates of Anoy Mundi. Having been expelled from Spain in 1492, he probably transplanted an old custom of Spanish Jews into North Africa, where the Chevra Kedisha had hitherto been unknown. So he views this as a historical movement from the Spanish Jewish community into North Africa, because one of the overflows of the expulsion of Spanish Jews certainly was to Portugal in the west, but it was certainly also across the ocean, across the Mediterranean Sea down south to Morocco. And this was one of the institutions that he brought to the Moroccan Jewish community, was the organization, as opposed to the sporadic dealing with Niftarim, as an example. Another place which he also notes, Rabbi Adler notes in this article, as you can see, there were less graphics in these days in newspapers. This is all just very fine text. He notes the oldest takonos that we have. Takonos literally mean, what does a takona mean? Amendments, rules, right? So we have the rules that are for a Chevra Kedisha. The oldest ones that we have extant are the takonos of the city of Prague in the 1600s. And here he references them. I was not able to get the actual text of this one, unfortunately, but here's the reference to it. Having thus followed the notices found the benevolent burial societies in various works, some specimens of the rules and regulations, or the takanot, or some of them may be added. In 1693, the takanos, the law of the Chevra Kedisha, Gemilas Chasadim in Prague, was issued, written in the Judeo-German jargon. They ordained that every member of the brotherhood was to attend synagogue morning and evening under penalty of a fine. So to be part of the Chevra Kadisha, you needed to attend Minyan. No member was to frequent the tavern of a non-Jew. Jewish taverns were evidently more to be recommended. Expulsion was to follow any disreputable conduct, the readmission only permitted after a sincere apology. Fines were to be inflicted in a case of inattention of duties for disobedience to the orders of the Gaboyim and the Muvurarim, the committee, for keeping company with the musketeer, who must evidently have been considered an undesirable associate. The subscription was to be five, and I'm not sure this word is kreuzers, to the minimum, and, I'm sorry? The kreuzers to the minimum, and no more than 15 per annum. No person was to become a full member until after 8 years of probation. That's how long it took to get involved in the society. The Kohanim, who could not enter the graveyard, were to be allowed to make the coffin and other requisites for the dead. Which means, let's say a Kohen wanted to be part of the Chevra, of course it's a bit unfortunate, it doesn't work that way, so they could at least make the Aronos. The Karonim, the members who chose chose by rot to conduct the funeral, were to carry the bier and to perform all the offices of the dead without paid attendance, so assistance. So there was very specific rules as to how this would work. Interestingly enough, we do have the Tikonos. This is available in Tikonos. If you take a look at the bottom of the page, from Amsterdam. Okay, notice that just it's interesting to see the decoration over here. You just see they have the skull and crossbones at the top of the printing of this on page 4. Right, it's Koyamar Hashem Elokim Atzamosa Ela Hinani Meviv Abochem Ruach Vichiyasem. Where's that pasuk from at the very top? That's from the prophecy in Yechezkel Perek Lamed Zayin about the idea of resurrection of the dead. So part of the Tikonos with this. And there's a number of psukim. You notice the hourglass sign as well, right? The notion of timeliness. It's fascinating that actually the Mishneh Chochma says that the reason why one of the functions of a Chevra Kadisha, in Parshas Vayechi, the Mishneh Chochma says, was to give what's called a Sudas Havra'ah, that when a person comes back from the cemetery, Rachmana Litzlan, the Chevra Kadisha gives them a Suda Savra. The reason is because people say there's due reason to question HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how could this happen? Why? Why is this happening? And so what happens is there's a notion in Kabbalah what's called Nahama Dikisufa, which means the bread of embarrassment. What is the bread of embarrassment? Whenever you get something which you don't deserve, somebody does a chesed for you and really you could have earned it yourself. You could have done it yourself. You could have rolled up your sleeves and done it, but you get it on a free basis. You feel terrible, right? The Gemara says, in fact, a person would prefer one measure of their own than nine of another person's. You want to earn your own. You want to earn your upkeep. You want to feel like it. You don't want to live your life on a trust. You want to be able to have earned your own upkeep. So it's interesting. That's the reason why we're put in this world, says the Mishneh Chochma, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu could give us all the good in the world, but we wouldn't deserve it. So what does Hashem do? He says, go into this world. I'll give you some very difficult decisions to make. You make those decisions right, you'll earn your keep. You'll come out at the end and you'll earn your bread. So at the end of life, it's interesting, says the Mishneh Chochma, what happens is that the first thing the people get is the family receives, the Avelim receive, is a free meal. To remind them, the reason why a person has to go through this world is in order to make sure that their meals are not free. Right? To make sure that the meals are not free. That's the reminder of the Suda Savra. That's the sort of you sort of see some of these icons, the icon of the hourglass, the candle, the cross, the skull and crossbones on these tikonos are reminders about the ephemeral nature of where it is. You'll see in the little crest of arms at the very bottom, it's Chevra Kadisha Gimilas Chasarin. That's the acronym there. Ches Kuf Gimel Ches. Just fascinating over here. Just here's a few examples from a Tikonos in Amsterdam, just to give you a sense as well about how it's structured. It's a pretty long sefer itself. But on the top left on page 5, he says the following, just actually in Samach Vav, the second paragraph. It's the fiscal responsibility of those who lead the chevra to diminish the amount of money spent, the expenses on burial. He says, "B'chol reviyus shana, yisbu manhigay." And I believe some communal institution, Kabbalas demay erech amachzikim gam demay knossos. B'chol shara knesses yekablu alzmanam. So there's going to be some sort of accounting as to where the money goes as well, quarterly. It's very fascinating, these things. Then if you move over to the right hand side in the next paragraph in Ayin Zayin, he says, "V'acharei asher iskimu alufim. He says, "Mekil asenu la'amid l'rishus b'nei ha'chevra ha'beis kneses b'rechov." And again, this is not a Hebrew word. Yasek shama dvorim ha'elu. There's a number of responsibilities. I have to say, Mishnayos he says, "B'chol erev v'erev yilmad." Shama harebi de chevra lefachoes gimel revie shah koidim tvila mariv bizmano. The person who's the head of the chevra needs to be there for 15 minutes learning every evening. Va'az yispalul b'nei chevra da'ainu davko v'loy zulosom. They have to daven alone by themselves. Ochein, b'chol erev Shabbos Kodesh, erev Yom Tov, k'moy ken erev Rosh Chodesh, lo yispalul shama. They shouldn't daven there. There's a certain regulation as to where they daven, how they daven, how much they have to learn. B'chol Shabbos Kodesh chatzos, before every week before chatzos, on Shabbos, da'ainu min ha'chodesh nisnan ad tishrei, Yilmad Shama Harebi Lefachos Kechatzi Shah. The head of the Chevra Kedisha at Chatzos on Shabbos has to relearn at least half an hour. Right? Belele Shavuos Veshana Rabba Laesa Sheyita Beine Agaba Yustu Shama Halimud Harebi Ubne Chevra. The Chevra Kedisha have to be learning the Nata Shavuos and the Nata Shana Rabba. There's no excuses. So just to give you just even a sense of the responsibility of the Chevra. This is not simply a opt-in kind of institution here. There's a very large umbrella as to this. Here's an example of the introduction of the Taikonos in one of the cities in Romania. In Hebrew, it reads in source 8, Anshei HaChabura Ze Lo Ze Yiyu Merutzim. Everybody should be happy or appeased with one another. We shouldn't have any problems with each other. V'lo Yiyu Moshavim Chas Lo Shalom Moshav Leitzim. And when we get together, it should never be with frivolity. V'im Shnayim Mehem Yiyu Nitzim. If there's a fight within our Chevra, if there are two people disagree, take care of Ze Lo Ze Yiyu Merutzim. It's a responsibility that they have to make peace with one another. And it should not be like sheep that spread out across the meadow and do their own thing. Notice, of course, the rhyme. This is the introduction to it, that the poetic nature of this. They really need to work together. So there's a very high responsibility. What is interesting is something which perhaps we don't know too much of today, is that the Chevra was also one of the only solvent organizations throughout history in the Jewish community. And part of the reason is because anybody who had to go through this process had to pay the Chevra Kedisha. And there wasn't necessarily a fixed sum for payment. Here's an example. In Europe, in fact, the Chevra had a very strong control of every community. So much so, let's take a look at this fascinating writing. This is an article by Arthur Goren, who has a very interesting perspective on the fee structures of the Chevra Kedisha. Its sacred function was not only the source of the Chevra Kedisha's standing, it exercised considerable power, or we may say social control, because of its monopoly of burials and the somber fact that sooner or later all would require its services. The Chevra Kedisha determined the fees for its services and assigned grave plots. Because Jewish law required burial as soon as possible, after death as possible, normally within 24 hours, the Chevra Kedisha could pretty much dictate its own terms. It uses sliding scale fees, age, non-residency, and location of the burial plot and financial status of the deceased were the determining factors. Isaac Levitas, in his discussion on the fees charged by the Chevra Kedisha, makes the following point. Quote, "Woe to the rich who in life habitually fail to discharge their obligations to the community or generally fell out of favor with it. Towards such, there was no maximum to the inheritance tax it levied against them." Yeah, fascinating. So the Chevra Kedisha, so to speak, had payback at the end. All that they should have contributed during their lifetime and did not was now collected from their estate or from their next of kin. The society maintained that it was entitled to be exorbitant in such cases, since the money thus exacted was not for the profit of the private person, but for the benefit of charities shared by the entire community. Just understand that the Chevra Kedisha wasn't simply a burial society. It was also the society which visited the sick, which gave the funding for those who couldn't bury, and in many cases had publications, and involved themselves in other communal institutions as well. So the money went back. So there were individuals who, unfortunately, who received this type of requirement. Another example, the Chevra Kedisha had recourse to other sanctions in curbing deviant behavior. The best known of these was a threat of what it called a donkey's burial. Levitas brings us the text of such a decision taken by a Chevra Kedisha. Whereas Reb Abraham misbehaved towards God and men, Therefore, a grave shall be assigned to him at the cemetery to correspond to his deeds, namely, away from decent people. And whereas at present there are alive other rebels like him, deserving to be buried only outside the cemetery fence, therefore we left space about his grave wherein those like him may be buried. So there's a special section for people who lived less than desirable lives. Discussing the same theme, Barron describes a donkey's funeral which took place in a small Eastern European community during the 19th century. An informer's corpse, that's somebody who went to the authorities to malign the Jewish community or individuals therein, a moiser, was given ablutions with muddy water by Gentiles. His casket was placed on a garbage wagon on three wheels, dragged by an infirm horse, and was accompanied to the cemetery only by gangs of shouting and mud-slinging boys and barking dogs. So there's the Chevrah Kadisha had its a role in society as well. In a certain sense, it also kept society in check as well. It was one of the most powerful institutions in a Jewish society because it was needed, which is why you see emerging later on, already in the reform movement in Europe, and later on in America, you see bunds which were created to escape this. The workman's bund, there was a number of different societies created where they were called free thinkers, were allowed to be buried based on whatever they wanted. And now funeral directors, as it moved to America, started taking the role of the power of the Chevrah Kadisha had. It's fascinating to trace this. This whole article itself is on that topic of how it changed in America and how the Chevrah's role has changed over the time as opposed to the Eastern European model. Yes.
It seems to be.
So actually, to your point, you're right. There's a very thin line here because there's the kavod ha'meis, and then there's also the deterrence. It's important to just also realize this, that a lot of deterrence laws were not meant to be used. Meaning to say, you know, the idea of a speeding fine is not meant to get money as much as it's meant to stop people speeding. It's important to realize this. Some of these deterrences were there in order to be able to rectify society, whereas at the same time, unfortunately, sometimes you'll see it exacted. And I would like to distinguish in halacha, perhaps, between the way the funeral is conducted and the way the mace is treated. So as an example, just to look at some halachic aspects of this, to exactly your point, the Geshur HaChaim, Rav Yechiel Michal Tukachunsky, who's one of the authoritative figures when it comes to the matters of death and avelos, talks about this, and he says a very interesting point. He has one of the takonas lahalacha, or when it comes to kuras mes, and you'll see this in practice. He says in source 10 on the top of page 7, he says, "Ein la'asos shum shinui ben amesim." You don't treat the dead, any dead, different to one another. Bain, he says, but again, I'm sorry, I just printed it small here, "L'rechitza v'atahara v'alevisha," whether it comes to the immersion, the ritual purification process, the tahara, where it comes to the burial aspects. You don't get to be buried in special garbs. Eri gets the same tachrichim, the same white, simple garments with no adornments, nothing special, the same coffins, right? The very simple plain box. With the most indication on it might be a magin dovid in wood. That's the most that is treated. He says, however, he says, "Zulas inyanei kavod shemechalkim l'tamid chacham ola ish maase mikol shekein anasi kagon neros dolkin kenahug etzel ha'sfardim." He says, but you'll see that sometimes there's special treatment, not in the way the mace, the body per se, is treated, but the way that the funeral's conducted. So, for instance, at a funeral of a great Talmud Chacham in the Sfaradi community, you'll see candles which are lit by the head. You'll notice, by the way, that we should not have to go to funerals, but at a time that one has to go to a funeral, you'll notice, like even over here at Boulevard chapels, they have that red candle which is placed just by the head of the coffin. That's referencing this custom. He says, "Oy nesias hamita lemato, oy hespedim v'ribui malavim v'kadoy malazem." He says, or perhaps longer eulogies for more important people, but it's not going to be in a certain sense impacting the body itself, the bear, the mace itself.
He
Ela shehem rak b'mesiv lemeis. He says, and he says that without this, mechalkim yoser kavod k'moy shebechayav chelko loy kavod yoser. So he distinguishes between the way that the body itself, the niftar, is treated, and the way the funeral is conducted. Just a fascinating chiluk to your point, Abi. And this is true to today, which, by the way, is a very sombering and humbling thought, that no matter how high or low that we are, ultimately we're treated with the same ultimate respect. At 120, we all are treated with the same level of kavod. There are a few other interesting distinctions that he notes that are made by the Gesher HaChaim. He notes an interesting thing, and he says that, you know, that it's true that there's a halacha, that one of the responsibilities of the Chevra Kaddish, and our Chevra Kaddish, and our shul does this, is to make sure that there's a Suda Savra, that after a family of Avelim, lo yaleinu, kol tzara shelo tavoy, comes back from the funeral, a feast is set up for that family. Right, not a feast, but there's a meal. And many times the meal, the practice is to have foods which are circular, whether it be an egg, whether it be bagels, something which of that nature. It is interesting that the Gesher HaChaim points out that there's also a minag for the Chevra Kaddisha to have a meal organized for them. That they should have a meal organized for them. Why? Because as long as they have to deal with a Tahara or a Kvura, they are not allowed to eat. The halacha is that they need to be fully focused. Their first and most important focus right now is to ensure that the posterity of this funeral is kvura, which means, therefore, in order to alleviate the concern, their concern as first responders, there should be a meal prepared for them. In fact, so much so that the Gesher HaChaim notes in halacha that he quotes the following. He quotes Rav Shmuel Salant, who was one of the great leaders of the community in Yerushalayim a century ago. He says, and this is on the right-hand side over here, this is towards the middle of the paragraph where there's a parenthesis. He says, Moreno Rabbeinu Agon Rav Shmuel Salant Zechet Zalig Rocha, Hayakor Leze Sudas Mitzvah. The meal arranged for the Chevra Kaddisha was called a Sudas Mitzvah. Gamishim Degarmu Lasois Mitzvah, because they enabled the Chevra to do a Mitzvah, and V'kol Kach Ad She'omar Pa'amim Achados L'Chavrei Chevra Kaddisha She'avio Lo'i Chaticha Me'ashirayim Halalu. He himself would ask them to bring a leftover of that meal so he could eat it, meaning that's how much he esteemed the meal of the Chevra Kaddisha. Once again, it's just fascinating to me, because what do you see over here? We create a Chevra Kaddisha to service our community. And what do? Is we service the Chevra Kaddisha so that they can service our community. That's what seems to be happening over here. This is the level of treatment they get. Another example of the uniqueness of the treatment of a Chevra Kaddisha is that there's what's called once a year a Yom Chevra Kaddisha. There's a day of the Chevra Kaddisha. In some communities it used to be Erev Rosh Chodesh Shvat, and which is coming up. But in many communities, more predominantly it is Zayin Adar, the day of the birth and the death, or the death and the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. And there's a number of practices which surround this day. So it's not just that it's a day to have a breakfast, as many shuls do. But there's a number of practices. As an example, one of the practices is that the Chevra Kaddisha would fast on that day. The whole Chevra Kaddisha. Again, coming back to some of the takonis we saw already in Amsterdam and in Prague, this is treated very seriously. There's a very significant responsibility, yoke of responsibility on the shoulders of these individuals. And they would fast this day. And he has listened to some of the halachas, he says. But Yom Zeh, in the second paragraph, the last section of the Gesher HaChaim, but Yom Zeh Mis'anim Kol Chavrei HaChevra Kaddisha. Skimming the parentheses, Baboike Mispalalim Yachtov Kol HaChaver V'Beis HaKnesses Miyuchad Lohem. They are davening in a special shul, a special minyan. Skipping the parentheses, he goes to say where it was. Achar, and he says, it used to be in the Churva Shul in Yerushalayim. Achare Chazar Sashatz Armim Slichos Miyuchadim L'Yom Zeh. There was a special slichos instituted for Yom Chevra Kaddisha. The Korim Vayichal, there were a special Kriyas HaTorah for of a fast day for the Chevra Kaddisha, with its Kriyas HaTorah, Gam Tfilas Shachris. Achar Tfilah Holchin Chol Chavrei HaChevra Kaddisha V'Agabayim V'Roshei HaDegolin LeBeis HaAlmin. Then they would all walk together to the Beis HaAlmin, which is the cemetery outside Yerushalayim in Har HaZeisim. Shom Mispalim Kuvutzois Kuvutzois. And they would go to different graves and pray. And he goes on to say, skipping the parentheses, Es HaTfilah HaNemara Al Beis HaAlmin B'Yabayim HaZeh. There's a special tefillah. Skipping a paragraph. Here, actually, the next paragraph is important. B'Tfilah Zu Mevakshim HaChaverim Gam Slicho Ma'ameisim. Chaver Kaddish would ask forgiveness from those they buried. Pen chas shalom nichshelu ba'ayan hagosh yeshara klape mimayhem. Maybe in some way they weren't respectful. Maybe they didn't treat the niftar in a way that was absolutely due to that. And he says the following: Hatvila maschalas. And he has the tefillah that would say on Yom Chaver Kaddisha, Ribono Alamim, Master of the Universe, I don't call on Neshamas, the Master of all the souls. Vinei osonu lefonecha. He says, I'm not sure what this is. Hashem, Avinu, and I can't understand. Thank you. B'shevach v'ayda v'tzchina. Maybe we didn't treat those who passed away in the right way. Or maybe we even walked over Kvarim while we were involved in another Kvura. He says, we ask from you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mechila and Slicha. And he says, this is printed in a number of the Sfarim. So as much as it's an institution that benefits the society, just to understand the gravitas of this, this is why you'll hear at a number of funerals, you'll hear the rabbi will oftentimes at the funeral itself will ask mechila from those who are around the kever, on behalf of the chevra kadisha, lest that it wasn't treated sufficiently. What we didn't do now, just to understand what the limitations, there's so much more to cover, is the halacha is actually itself of Tara, which is not appropriate for the setting necessarily. The halachas of Tara itself and all the other aspects of what a chevra kadisha provides. But what we have learnt about is how far it goes and how important this institution exists. Baruch Hashem, we're now living in New York where we have really tens of chevra kadishas in different neighborhoods. Chevra kadishas who are people who are not known, not made public to other people, who's in their zechus on Uchayim. You know, their zechus, our communities are able to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we look after the kovod hames, we look after the kovod hachaim as well. And b'mheirav yameinu, b'ilah hamaves lo netzach, u'moch Hashem lakim dima me'al koponim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should swallow death, as the Pasuk says. We should not have to have the uses of this in the schus of the way that we've treated our niftarim. V'chanenu menakash, u'moratzah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, l'zakoyis, esizor l'fichach, yirbolein torah, mitzvah, shenema adonecha, v'etzman, tzikoyak, dil torah, v'yadzir.